The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Rachel Smith, CEO of ExchangeWire, welcoming my very special guests for today's episode. Harriet Cunningham, UK Sales Director from Cybids. Hello, Harriet. Welcome.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Not at all. It's a delight. And, of course, Kieran O'Kane, from all the way from the other side of the office here at ExchangeWire Towers in London. How
Hello.
Are you, Kieran?
Thank you for having me on your podcast.
I like this, my podcast. This is good. Okay, let's jump straight into news stories for the week, this week, kicking off with our first story, which is focusing on artificial intelligence regulation. So regulatory bodies in the EU, the UK and Germany are introducing a framework for regulating AI and specifically looking at how AI is used and managed in an attempt to prevent discrimination and biases from being maintained by algorithms. So interestingly, UK regulatory bodies in particular are looking at three specific areas. So that's auditing practices, AI assurance, and also algorithmic transparency. So similar moves are being made in the US by related regulatory bodies, and they're particularly making some headway at state level to create standards for the use and application of AI. And in more specific detail, the National Security Commission and Government Accountability Office has advised the US Congress this year that legislation would be needed in order to protect the civil rights of citizens in response to cases where algorithms have been blamed for serving harmful content on social media sites. So I guess what's interesting about this particular news story is that some of this is clearly being underpinned by a sort of growing atmosphere of public mistrust towards the use and application of, say, artificial intelligence and machine learning, how it applies to digital content, and specifically how it applies to digital content in the context of social media sites. But also it seems to be being underpinned by a sort of a general kind of concern amongst the public that AI and machine learning could be being used to develop algorithms that are kind of enabling discrimination and biases to flourish in our society. So really quite interesting that regulatory bodies are starting to look at AI in a bit more detail. My question to the both of you is, are these forms of regulation going to actually make AI more accountable? Is that possible? And are regulatory bodies that we're specifically talking about in this particular news article, so those bodies that we're fairly familiar with here in the UK, but also in the EU and other European constituencies, as well as over in the US, are they approaching this in the right way, in your opinion? Harriet, let's go to you first for comment on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, you know, ultimately, each industry needs to be equipped with a sort of competent body that is able to recommend regulations and sort of best practices to government. And, you know, obviously in the UK, we have the IAB, and obviously the IOC guidance has already given us sort of AI and data protection sort of guidelines. But, you know, I think it's really important, you know, laws and regulations are implemented to establish standards, maintain order, resolve dispute, and sort of importantly protect liberty and sort of rights. And, you know, all of those things should be welcomed not only by the businesses, but by consumers too. You know, we welcome regulations that establish standards and sort of phase out those sort of bad actors and vendors that slow the adoption of AI, you know, particularly in our industry, by sort of undermining trust. And that's because of bad practices. But, you know, ultimately that will make all players accountable. But, you know, the concern remains in our industry is that of sort of transparency, and that AI systems are sort of still seen as a bit of a black box. And, you know, ultimately the opposite is true. It can be sort of, that information can be made available, and trust is such a critical factor to business relationships and sort of subsequent technology adoption. So, you know, AI should be the opposite to that, giving a clearer view on the decisioning behind ad buying, and, you know, giving people insights into sort of what's working, what's not, and sort of what's continually being explored is, you know, sort of an imperative. You know, the tighter regulations, I think, you know, that will protect to our rights in a sort of similar way that sort of GDPR and cookie depreciation within the browsers has done. It will make the data cleaner. So the, you know, what's fueling the AI's optimization, you know, is it more in a compliant manner? You know, we don't want to see the sort of situations that we've seen a couple of years ago and sort of, yeah, come around again.
Mm. Ciaran, what do you think? You're always quite opinionated when it comes to industry regulation.
I am. In this respect, I believe regulation is necessary. Let me just put two things to you, right? Most of these algorithms are written by or developed by white males, which have biases built in as a standard because they can't help themselves, right? The other thing is, we as a human race have a primitive monkey brain, right? We need to be protected from the algorithms because look at the way that social media has sort of affected our behaviors in many ways, our political decisioning, by basically serving up content that just basically exaggerates the worst aspects of human nature, like as in like, you know, like conspiracy theories, et cetera, fake news. We need legislation to protect the human race because we're just a primitive species, right? We are. We're monkeys, basically. We're barely out of the trees. 10,000 years, right? That is a fact. So we're up against probably the most sophisticated AI ever developed in any world. So the government needs to kind of take it on head on. I actually just believe that AI has so many good applications.
Right?
It has huge applications. Harriet obviously works for a company that's doing a lot of interesting stuff around the advertising space and marketing space, but it has huge applications elsewhere in different industries. But we've seen what Facebook done. We're seeing what TikTok is doing. Like, I know that TikTok is not but the people are addicted to content. Like, we just can't help ourselves. So I think we need to kind of have some training wheels for us to protect not only ourselves, but like the future generations who are just basically, in many ways, being programmed, right? Algorithms program your brain. You don't know it. Habits get formed very quickly. And AI could be a bad thing in that respect. So I think this is a really good development. I think more legislation is necessary. Will companies start, you know, obviously publishing code and algorithms so people can actually see what's in them? That'd be quite interesting. But I don't think that's private. That's like, you know, that's a, you know, AI, I'm sorry, some IP. I don't know if that can be done, but yeah, but it's a good step. But I think it's necessary because obviously we don't want white guys telling us how to fucking live our lives. Sorry for the death bomb there, but that's kind of my reality.
It's to be expected, Ciaran. It's been a while since we've had you on the podcast. I mean, it's interesting. You raise a couple of interesting points there, Ciaran, which is that, you know, firstly, obviously, you're going in hard on the importance of regulation. But secondly, you're also mentioning the sort of inherent, dangers within anything that's sort of written by a particular proportion of people in our society, right? So what I'm thinking as you're chatting that through is that arguably, well, most regulatory systems are probably only as good as the people that have written them or the way that they've been designed and perhaps also the way that they're going to be implemented and the way they're going to be and the way those regulatory frameworks are going to be tested and pushed and developed over time. So Harriet, I'm just wondering if you've got a point of view on that. You know, if we think about the industry's most recent experience when it comes to regulation and most broad brush experience when it comes to regulation, it have to be GDPR, which is becoming a lot more sophisticated than it was sort of a couple of years ago. When it comes to AI, what thoughts have you got around how a regulatory framework could work best? And do you think we're heading in the right direction at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a complicated subject that to get the right brains in the right room to sort of understand how we can sort of create and importantly, like maintain and develop order. You know, like you said, with GDPR, that's been something that has sort of grown over time, and as people start to understand it more and more, they can sort of flex that. But you know, like Ciaran said, like the AI systems and decisioning systems, like it's a huge power, it's a huge resource, and with that comes such a great sort of responsibility. And yeah, again, like Ciaran mentioned, like it's not just us adults using this. Like, you know, there are young people using this. Generations will grow up with AI being part of their sort of everyday. And you know, if we don't sort of get a clamp on that that sooner rather than later, then, you know, it's going to be too big to sort of wipe out the people that are not being transparent and are using sort of bad practices and sort of being a bit snaky about it.
There's a responsibility where, beyond what the government's doing to educate the wider public that you may be, you know, you may be profiled or you may be led down a certain path because of your primitive brain, right? Like, just say you're stupid, be aware that this algorithm could take you in a different direction. You're not that
to amplify your own stupidity.
It's more about being self-aware, and yeah. I think that's a big thing. I think it's really good that this is now becoming proper topics. I would love to see more sort of mainstream publications and TV programs actually discussing how much power algorithms have over our lives, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was going to be my next question is, do you think that some of this, you know, the push to further regulation, creating frameworks and guidance for how AI is used and applied, yeah. Do you think, firstly, that some of that will start to become more accessible just for the general consumer so that they understand the implications of this more? And secondly, do you then think it's going to also be driven by consumer trends, which is that people are becoming much more conscious and aware of what their own personal data is being used for in the context of digital content and marketing messaging and all of that sort of stuff. So do you think some of this will be driven by consumer concern and input?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's very difficult to kind of start thinking about how you think, right? It's exhausting. Most people just can't be arsed, right? But some people will make an effort, right? They'll probably, you know, they will ration the amount of time their kids have on these platforms, and that's probably a good start. We don't want a generation growing up who's completely addicted to algorithm-driven content. Like, that's not healthy. I don't know. Like, the TikTok stuff is interesting because it's usually addictive. I've seen people on it all day, and they just basically get sucked into rabbit holes, and that is not a good thing. I think it's a good, if we can just be more self-aware, I guess, and it's probably pushing it into the broader conversation in the national narrative, right? It's happening here in the UK, it's happening in Ireland. You can see it now starting to permeate. Like,
I mean, we're always
the general public and regulations is always two steps behind technology.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. Like, that's absolutely true. I mean, just because, Harry, I don't want to come to you for your thoughts on that too, but just one final thought from me on that. I mean, you know, we've been surrounded by sort of addictive content for quite a long time. If I think back to the early days of things like tabloid content, whether that's through tabloid newspapers or tabloid sort of style magazines, you know, Heat magazine was basically the sort of Daily Mail sidebar of shame before it existed, right? And yeah. All of that stuff was designed to keep you hooked into this kind of relatively light, fluffy, fairly thoughtless content that just kept drawing you back to the same place, consequently all being fueled by advertising. So that's been around for ages. I completely agree with you, Kieran, that, you know, it all being much more, it all being now sort of digitally available makes it that much more accessible, therefore, you know, arguably makes it that much more potentially addictive. So there's all sorts of things sort of wrapped up in that. But anyway, I digress. Harriet, thoughts from you on that?
Yeah, I do you know what? Maybe it's that we just all need to make a bit of effort to hear the good stories about what AI can deliver. Yep. Like, you know, like most things within the news, like, we focus on the negatives, and because that creates controversy and discussion, and actually, you know, when good things happen, the conversation often ends up being relatively short. So, you know, maybe there is an ask for businesses that are working with an AI to share their good stories, and that not just being like, oh, I got someone to watch, you know, spend 4 hours on TikTok and spend £100. It's, you know, yeah, how else is that kind of delivering positive things for the communities?
I think that's a good point, right? This is not about taking on the machines or the machines taking over, because that's ridiculous. There is a very anti-technology
narrative associated with that.
I don't particularly like, but AI has so many positive applications, like around health, for instance, right? I could see AI being sort of the first step in diagnosing diseases or diagnosing health concerns, and the GP is the next step. So it takes out a big step of people who are a bit hypochondriac, like myself today, obviously.
Yeah.
Nervous wreck. Without them going to...
Kieran had a big night last night, listeners.
Without going to a GP's office, like, there's huge applications around health, I think that's massive. But the problem is, it can be used to the detriment of people about profiling. It could stop people getting mortgages. There's a lot of stuff. Like, I just think,
that's what a regulatory framework or a standards framework is there for, absolutely. Right?
And I think it's a great, because it's, I think the general public needs to be shown the good side of this. Technology can help people, right? It's not here to take jobs, which is the first thing. It's going to automate, you know, your burger making or your sandwich making or whatever, you know, line of factories, et cetera, et cetera. But actually what's been shown is that technology then leads to new jobs, right? It creates more knock-on effects.
Different jobs.
So I think, like, more of a positive conversation. I don't want to be negative and say, I think people have to take responsibility for their own habits, right? How much time do you spend on Facebook? It's like eating, like, you know, a big bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken every day. You're going to put on a couple of kilos and have a stroke within a couple of months. You know what I mean? It's the personal responsibility aspect. And I agree with Harry. You've got to weigh it up. It can't be all negative. That's actually the one thing that's an algorithm in itself. Like, it's just like we are drawn to the drama, right? Yeah. Whether it's bloody COVID or Brexit or global warming, which global warming is a real thing, by the way. I'm saying, like, it's just we are attracted to the doomsday scenario, right? Where a rational conversation is required here, right? There are good parts of this technology and there are bad parts. It's like the same with a lot of things in life.
Totally. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you might have wanted to come in on that, Harriet. I guess, sort of in summary, I think we'd all be agreeing that, you know, some form of a regulatory framework is definitely needed. And, it would be welcomed by the technology industry and also probably by the advertising technology industry. It's just very much a case of how that gets informed and shaped and make sure that it's appropriate for use, right?
Yeah.
Great. Moving us on to the second news story of the week is some updated news and information on Google's Privacy Sandbox, which is that they're launching fresh trials of the latest updates within Privacy Sandbox, which is in preparation for cookie deprecation, which is scheduled to take place, as everybody knows, towards the back end of 2023. So what's currently happening or very soon to be happening is that developers will be able to trial the code that exists within the Privacy Sandbox, specifically around Topics API, which is the replacement for Flock, and Fledge ad auction management and attribution reporting API. So this is, like I said, the latest update from Google within their Privacy Sandbox series of proposed solutions for targeting in Chrome and managing advertising campaigns in a Chrome environment. And now people have got the opportunity to test these solutions. So just to remind listeners who I'm sure are already fairly intimately aware of the ins and outs of this particular story, but Topics is the proposed targeting via categories of content viewed by people online. And it applies a much more general level of categorization than its predecessor, Flock, which was heavily criticized as a result of concerns associated with how you might be profiling people's activity online. And also obviously concerns associated with Flock about the vulnerability that it had to fingerprinting. There are yet wider industry concerns about this new suite of proposals, which is that a number of industry commentators and groups, including the W3C's private ad tech community group, are concerned that Topics aren't going to stand up to increasing privacy regulatory scrutiny. And that's as a result of its reliance on cross-device targeting, which many people, cross-domain targeting, which many people believe won't be permitted going forward, and also that it would still rely on the unrestricted use and flow of data, which will become increasingly more complex as we go forward. Then with respect to Fledge and the ad auction management environment, there's concerns that Google will be yielding a little bit too much power and control over that environment, and that a lot of question marks over the role of SSPs in that environment and whether SSPs will have any opportunity to control anything in that environment, and whether Google would consider making governance of this particular marketplace independent. So looking for some opinions on how these proposals are progressing. Are we getting closer to a workable post-cookie solution in Chrome, or are we getting further away from it? Lots of head shaking already. So Kieran, ready, set, go.
Why are we bothering? Google, go away, right? we don't want your profiling anymore. I just have not engaged this. I just think it's a waste of time and effort to be billing this crap, because the world has moved on. We are in a privacy first world, right? I would say to the users here, or to listeners, our listeners, that you should stop using Chrome. Just use Safari. Go privacy first. The industry needs to get off this Google crack, right? We need to get rid of this. We need to move to privacy first targeting and privacy first attribution. And giving Google control over auction in their Chrome is just feeding the Google machine. All we've done for like 10 years is feed that black box of arbitrage for them to make money. Do you know what's really good? And Harry will stand, because she works in the company, is actually post cookie. He doesn't really care about cookies, or it's a very interesting business. I think a walled garden war is the best thing to happen in this industry, because it stops Google getting more data. Right?
You mean a series of walled gardens, a proliferation of buying environments.
The more walled gardens there are, the better, right? The better for the industry. It's good for everybody. Everybody makes money. Google makes less money. They have search. They have YouTube. Great. Let them get on with it. Don't let them get into CTV. Don't let them get into anything else, right? Keep them out, right? You see what they do. They basically bring AdWords in and they destroy any company in that space and operate a monopoly, right? I do not know why the industry is working with Google around this. Just quit it. Stop. Put it away, right? We'll be better off as a business, as an industry, if we decide not build solutions that are for the privacy first world, right? Look at Scibids, for instance, right? They're an AI marketing tool that optimizes for different walled gardens. They don't care what's in this. That's the evolution of ad tech, which I like to see, right? Moving beyond this data arbitrage, this fingerprinting nonsense. I can't believe I've moved to become a privacy mullah, but that's where I sit, right? If you build for a privacy first world, it will work, right? Advertising money will come. This is just nonsense.
Okay, so thank you very much, Privacy Muller. That was an excellent rant. I'm keen to hear what Harriet's got to say on this, but also a reminder, because I will come back to you in a minute, Kieran, so I'll give you a minute to think about it. The question was not, should we be using Chrome? It's, what do you think about the sort of progression of these proposals? Anyway, I know what you're going to say. It's all a waste of time. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Waste of time.
All right.
All right.
Harriet, over to you.
Do you know what? I mean, I think there's a big ask and ask the whole industry to stop using Google.
I'm not sure that
will happen.
That's very practical.
The day this podcast goes out, they'll see a big old crash. But, you know, there have already been sort of various iterations of the Privacy Sandbox proposal, which is obviously contributed to the delay of sort of the phasing out of the party cookie. And ultimately it's because Google are sort of listening and adapting and sort of trying something new. But, you know, so for us as an advertising community, we want to keep testing and we want to keep passing back that feedback. And, you know, that feels crucial to still be playing in sort of the Google world where so many clients and brands get so much value. And, you know, look, our clients want to serve ads to people who are relevant and, you know, getting to a place where we can do that so it doesn't feel like a massive cutoff for the industry, but we are moving in the right direction is something that they're sort of trying to help us do. That there are still parameters that mean we can operate as an industry and sort of make it work, you know, such as like the level of noise that's in the data, you know, the noise being introduced to better sort of preserve privacy and not allow other businesses to kind of tap in and understand how all of that data works so that they can kind of, you know, work around it. I really think like the focus quite differently to Karen's is, you know, working with them to sort of test and be part of that conversation with Google and the IAB groups and the Web3 conference. But, you know, ultimately that it does mean that there are going to be more and more delays as we kind of go back and forth with the sort of like regulatory scrutiny that this topic is receiving.
But it's just privacy hackery, right? Look, there's a thing called sellers defined audiences, which was released by the IAB Tech Lab last week, right? And it was a 4-year project, and it basically allows publishers to segment their own audiences and sell them into on a contextual basis into the market, right? We don't need Flock and we don't need Fledge, right? All you're doing is trying to hack privacy. The game is done, hey. We're not going to be able to profile people the way we used to, right? We're not going to be able to use cross-device IDs. We're not going to be able to do that at scale. It's just not going to happen.
No, you're right. But so,
the better for the industry.
So, but I think the point here is that already Flock is being superseded by Topics, and that does connect quite a bit to what Harriet was just talking about, which is Google working together with the industry to try to evolve some of the proposals that they're putting forward. And what you've also got to remember, Kieran, is that, you know, yes, you know, the principles of your initial argument slash rant may very well be, upheld by a lot of us, either personally or professionally, but how practical is it to expect that a big proportion of the world will just start using a completely different browsing environment? Right. Ultimately, that might be where things end up, but there's always a journey to get there, isn't there? What was interesting about some of these proposals is that when quizzed, you know, a number of people that were involved in the W3C group and a number of others that, you know, anonymously commented on it was, well, we're talking about quite complex and technical proposals, and it takes a while to rework those to a suitable level that is actually usable across a wide scale. So, you know, maybe we're getting closer to something that's usable within a Chrome environment. If everybody did what you suggested, Kieran, yes, it wouldn't matter, but, you know, still a lot of people will be operating in a Chrome environment.
The privacy sniff test, it won't work in Europe. Topics can be matched with an ID and then you're back to square one, right? Where all they're trying to do is hack privacy. It doesn't work. It won't work. And I tell you this, we'll be still talking about this in a year's time, because Google have made no progress, because ultimately what we're going to is a world completely changed, right? Reformed around measurement and targeting, right? I think the publishers now have the power, right? Seller-defined audience is interesting, right? Because they're able to build and segment their own audiences.
Yep.
I also think clean rooms have a massive future on the publisher side, on the media side, activation-wise. We would not be able to activate across IDs and cookies because it's illegal, right? There's a privacy lunatic out there waiting to sue you if you do that, right? There's legislation. And also, Apple have decided that, and more people are going to start using Apple because they're going to see the reason Google's moving this direction is because they're worried about losing customers, right? The more people that start using Apple, the less they have on Android.
And any other alternative browser. Yeah, and like Samsung, because there will be others. Yeah, and there will be others. I totally get that. Yeah.
I mean, look, this is very much in the weeds for the audience. And I appreciate there's people trying to work with Google, but like, you know, this only serves Google's grand plan,
which is one of the arguments that actually these proposals don't go anywhere near close to presenting a world where Google don't have full ownership and control over the environment. So
I mean, Google's
that's
like
going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people. Yeah,
you know, you just accept the fact that bear is going to attack you, right, at any time, right? That's the way I see them.
Harriet, I'll save you from getting any further into the debate. between us and commenting on the nature of bears and whether we should be friendly towards them or not. And I'll move us on to the third news story, because actually this is kind of quite nicely connected, which is a couple of pieces around the topic of attention metrics as important measurement in advertising. And as you said earlier on, Kieran, and Harriet, as you alluded to as well, actually attribution and measurement is one of the key important factors of advertising and marketing going forward, right? So interesting article that popped up this week talking about attention metrics and the world of attention metrics, often considered, I suppose, amongst many in the advertising industry as advertising's true currency. So I guess my question to you two is going to be, how essential are attention metrics to measuring the success of marketing campaigns? And what's your opinion on what the industry is doing from a technological perspective with respect to various tech tools and capabilities in trying to bring those attention metrics forward, trying to create very usable attention metrics for advertisers and marketers? So we know that some of the capabilities being developed are things such as passive eye tracking technology. There's a lot of tech tools out there that are experimenting with differential creative formats to garner attention from particular audiences in particular environments. There's also a number of attention-specific campaign filters that are enabling marketers and brands and agencies to measure the effectiveness of their campaigns according to specific metrics. So I'm just interested to know, you know, what's your impression on the world of attention metrics? How important do you think it is? You know, in an advertising marketplace where, as we've all just discussed, measurement is becoming, or let's say traditional forms of measurement, or many of the forms of measurements that the industry has been relying on for the last couple of years, is becoming slowly unpicked as we start to move towards a privacy-first environment, something that's much more consumer-centric as well. So what are the appropriate type of measurement metrics that we could be working on and should be working on, and what role does attention play in that? Harriet, I'm going to come to you first on that.
Yeah, no, Sandra, I don't think there's a huge amount of people arguing that, you know, attention isn't something that brands should be striving for. You know, it's that right person, right time, right message, sort of holy grail that everyone's always sort of been striving for. You know, if you get attention and you can, you know, it is the right users and you get something that's truly relevant and you see those desired outcomes, I think, you know, if it's correctly measured, it can be the sort of metric of the future, because it allows us to sort of identify the value. And as you mentioned, like at the end of cookies and everything moving towards being contextual, it's a fresh way of looking at ad efficiency. And I think clients welcome that. You know, older metrics like clicks, like they might not drive the tangible results that the clients are looking for. And, you know, they want something that's more sort of adequate and progressive. But, you know, I think the question really comes around sort of standardization. You know, unlike sort of a CPA metric, for example, there isn't just one answer for this form of metric. Like, lots of businesses are getting into the game, creating their own scorecard to sort of mark themselves, their clients' advertising spend against. But at the other end, brands are asking for this type of measurement, and that alignment sort of shows that, yes, attention will be the future, but everybody's approaching it in a different manner. They're using different technologies and they're using different methodologies. And I think ultimately we're talking about attention, but there are so many different ways in which it can be delivered to clients. And I think the importance then becomes, okay, are we scrutinizing and really understanding how we're measuring attention and how it's being judged? Because, you know, that's how we'll be able to understand what's working and ultimately what a user's comfortable with. Like, am I comfortable with eye tracking? And, you know, how do people feel about that? So I definitely think it is the way that the industry is going, but I think there's going to be a call in, you know, the not too distant future, you know, perhaps from this sort of attention council to provide some standardization for brands and agencies.
Kieran?
I think it's going to be a massive segment in ad tech. I think that any attention-based metric or measurement company needs to be independent media. Because as Harry says, they've got companies like GumGum and a few others have bought attention companies, and they're layering in with their company. Like, I think genuinely think it's a very, very big area for ad tech. There's been a couple acquisitions recently, but I don't think we've only started on this journey. I think it's going to be massive, because it is, first of all, it's probably the only privacy first way I can see of scale measurement, right? So the eye tracking stuff is panel based, so it's extrapolated up. It's not necessarily going to be tracking every user. It'll be an agreed panel, which basically there's a couple of companies in that space. I think Lumen's a good example of one of those companies. But I do agree the standardization piece will have to come, but I think these businesses will have to be independent. Much like the ad verification companies or even medical companies, I think they need to be almost standalone companies.
Those companies, because like you were just saying, there are some ad tech companies, for example, that specialise in ad verification that are also getting interested in attention 100%. Metrics.
And I could see IAS or Double Verify buying smaller players.
Yeah, Crimtan's another one that have acquired, that 100%. Are, you know, launching their own attention metrics offering. Yeah.
So you've got this interesting sort of play, and think about it, right? Like, the deprecation of cookies is here, right? Privacy's here, right? How do we where do we move forward? And if most of the stuff has been doing is being most of the media being pushed out is video related anyway, reach and frequency is hugely important and attention. But it goes back to Harry's, then it becomes like a customized piece. How do you build that into your outcomes, your attributions, right? I think that's super important. But for me, it's the logical way to go for the industry. I know you know, this links back to our previous conversation, tinkering with privacy and hacking privacy just to suit the current model. It just isn't working, right? It won't work in the next 12, 24 months. It just won't work, right? In the middle of this decade, this stuff will be like in the back of your mirror, like, because we won't be able to go back to that. So attention is going to be the industry's go-to metric, right? And it works for in-gaming, you know, the metaverse, all those things are going to have attention as the heart of their measurement. So it's a very exciting space, and I have to say, but I agree with Harry, there's still be work to be done in terms of that standardization, but that'll come, that will come.
So that was going to be my next question. Has anyone got any thoughts or views on how we should go about building some standardization around attention metrics or approaching that as an industry? Harriet?
Yeah, so I think there will be, it's going to be a journey, right? It's, you know, it's not as simple as a click-through rate or a video completed view where it is what it is. You know, ultimately, there will be lots of businesses that will have their sort of own approaches and their sort of own direction. And I think, you know, ultimately, it's a big ask for them to all come together and agree on a way in which it's measured. I imagine it will be quite like this sort of AI discussion we had a little earlier, which was, you know, there will be some sort of rules and regulations that sort of come into that. But I think, you know, what's going to be more important for the sort of agencies and the brands is the, you know, when I get a click, I know how to optimize towards a click. Can I optimize to attention? Is it going to be a metric that doesn't just work for me in terms of the deliverables, but it's actually something that I can sort of action on? And you know, not to kind of go in with the cybiz plug too early, but you know, our models have the capability to ingest third party KPIs, and you know, we've recently done a test with an auto brand where actually, you know, conversions was their primary KPI, but, you know, attention was their secondary. It was, you know, almost like their hygiene factor, similarly to kind of what viewability has been for many clients for many years. And, you know, we saw a CPA improvement of almost the kind of 30%, like 29%, which, you know, yes, with a CPM tie, yeah, but you know, you've got to spend money to make money in a way that is going to sort of deliver you transparent measurement that is going beyond just like something basic and standard. So yeah, I think there's big movements to come from that.
And that's an interesting point that you make as well, Harry. It will be interesting to see how more wide-scale use of attention metrics might drive the industry as well, because I guess that there could be an argument to suggest that if marketing campaigns get driven by attention metrics, then does that improve the quality of it, or does that drive up the price, which could become an issue, or does that create sort of certain metrics within the marketplace that become interesting and slash a bit of a challenge? It'll be interesting to watch that one.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, one of the things around attention is about the sort of questioning the creativity and the visualization of these ads too. And, you know, that's not something we're really used to doing, you know, from my point of view within programmatic media. It's not something that we analyze. It's not something I used to work at MIQ, you know, it wasn't something that was in the norm of something that we sort of analyzed when we were providing that back. So I think that's going to be, you know, a change and a consideration, which might be a bit uncomfortable to start with, but yeah, you know, no doubt our industry will find an answer.
That's an interesting one. The creative becomes super important now, as opposed to just clicks and you know conversions. I mean, conversions are still important, but the creative becomes hugely important in terms of like the attention piece. And but that is actually quite an interesting one, because I mean, the creative has been kind of ignored for the last 10 years in many respects. So we'll come back probably to a renaissance in creative. That could actually be a very good thing, because at the end of the day, creatives are hugely important and assets are hugely important in actually engaging the user. Like, you know what I mean? It's just...
I think it's partly that's reviving this conversation around data-driven creative and how that can improve the quality of advertising and how that could potentially improve, you know, measurement metrics and outcomes and output for marketers, right? And so attention will just become, well, not just, but I don't mean to, you know, play down how complex this could potentially be, but it will become another way to integrate, or another reason to integrate good quality creative, and you may very well see the results of your campaign campaign head off in a particular direction because you are, focusing it on attention metrics that are integrated with your your creative assets.
But it goes back then to the AI conversation at the very beginning, right? And what Cybids are doing is that it then optimizes the creative process, right?
Yeah.
Something we haven't really done. So you could have A/B testing of many different creatives and using the algorithm to improve that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the exciting. See, this is the exciting part of the industry. That I really think that cookies and IDs have almost destroyed the creativity piece of the industry, right? This is someone who's actually a techie and not, who can only basically do stick art. I can't even paint anything. But like, I appreciate that this is shift to quality now, right? Away from that sort of like mechanical
and transactional, like, probably, like really
not
transactional.
Even transactional. I think a lot of the old system was broken anyway. Like, you know, future windows and, you know, 30-day windows on a cookie is ridiculous. Like, you're making assumptions that person actually did, you know, do an action, right, based on what, like a supposition and a text file being on a computer. But I think that there's very interesting sort of play around AI and the walled gardens, especially, right? So that creative piece becomes important because you're running creative on TikTok, you're running creative on Amazon, right? You're running creative on CTV channels, you're running creative on The Guardian, The Telegraph, whatever. I think that's a hugely important thing. That's very exciting. It's like when you bring almost like two, you know, opposite the spectrum, AI algorithms and the creative piece, it definitely builds more innovation and more interesting stuff in the industry for sure.
Yeah, which I think would be very welcome at this stage. Let's move on to the second part of the podcast. Harriet, tell us a little bit more about Cybids, about what you're up to at Cybids, but also perhaps give us a bit of a rundown on Cybids as a business, the things that you guys are particularly focusing on, and, you know, what your, you know, what are some of the exciting things that you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, of course. So, for those that haven't sort of come across us before, so Cybids is an independent global leader building AI to make sort of marketing more effective. So essentially our AI helps brands and agencies provide sort of more efficient and effective targeting from their programmatic campaign performance, be that better performance from the conversion campaign, cheaper performance for your YouTube, increase in your sort of brand deliverables from video, or be that sort of to directly optimize to a third party report that you utilize for sort of measurement and attribution. And every day we're updating our sort of lengthy custom algorithms and you know, the tech in the back end that's sort of ingesting the data, analyzing it, building the sort of models, assigning the bids for each impression is ultimately what's sort of driving a sort of 30 to 70% performance increase for our clients. And is ultimately, you know, kept us in a really great position that we're able to kind of join you today. In terms of like things that are sort of upcoming and development, so, you know, the AI was already sort of had the ability to fight through the cookieless world. And, you know, today we leverage sort of an abundance of contextual signals and that provide sort of advanced optimization, which, you know, is of course privacy friendly and, you know, much to Kieran wanting Google to sort of disappear overnight. It's a business we're engaging with and sort of really testing much as we are with our sort of other DSP partners. But some of them kind of more like, I think, interesting and upcoming developments that we've got going on here is, you know, we're really proud to be sort of agnostic when it comes to sort of the agencies and businesses and platforms that we partner with. So, a big part of what we sort of believe in here is unifying the ad stack and working with those sort of like best in class companies from sort of first party measurement. But we've done lots with and have great partnerships with sort of Double Verify, Flash Talking, Playground XYZ, Adelaide, Mo, to incorporate their KPIs so that their clients can get more from their data. And that's a conversation that, you know, if you go back a year ago, we were probably having that once a month, and now we're having it sort of multiple times a week with kind of whoever we're kind of engaging with. And you know, and as that's starting to pick up pace, our name is in sort of industry too. So if you take a step back, we've got great relationships with our sort of DSP. So we just announced a really kind of a deep integration with Xandr, making the activation of our business sort of seamless, right from the kind of paperwork through to the billing is, you know, something that should, you know, it's going to be really easy for our teams. And yeah, you know, got a couple of great case studies coming out with sort of our deep work with Google and their sort of custom bidding features. So I think that's going to be, it's going to be a big year of partnerships from us and, you know, working with big names that brands and agencies are sort of familiar with and sort of helping them unlock more value from that.
Sounds like a really exciting period of time, right? And so are you mostly working then with other technology providers? Like you said, perhaps, you know, providing particular solutions to go alongside those technology solutions. But are you perhaps also working directly with either brands or agencies on specific bespoke projects and requirements?
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? That's often how it all comes around, right? It's like, you know, our industry is so great at collaborating. You know, brands and agencies are becoming more and more open with sort of what are their challenges that they're facing and kind of where do they need help. And actually, that's when we're able to sort of partnership, you know, with these businesses to provide a solution that is that can answer their questions and ultimately, yeah, more often than not, it's them coming to us at the start and us offering a solution and then sort of rolling that out across the rest of the industry. So I think I mentioned a little while ago about sort of the attention case study. You know, that's the third or second sort of example that we've done that here in the UK. And you know, hopefully that's going to be a solution that lots of clients are looking for. You know, if they've got the option to go beyond viewability and sort of focus on attention as their hygiene metric, then, you know, giving it a go at a relatively low cost is something that we expect people to be leaning in on.
And sort of extrapolating a little bit on some of the conversations we've already had, are you finding yourself, I suppose if we were to, I'm sure it's not this clear cut, but if we were to sort of separate some of the industry challenges that we're dealing with at the moment, there's all of the stuff that's associated with, you know, cookies and targeting, which is over there.
Yeah.
And then there's the sort of innovation piece, which is trying to solve problems, I guess, on a, you know, a sort of on a day-to-day basis. Are you finding yourself sort of much more consumed with that? And are you having people, you know, come to you more regularly, sort of seeking that innovation, saying we've got a particular issue around this, what could you do that could help us, or how could we tailor some of your solutions to get that extra element of something that we need, either associated with measurement and attribution or another technical problem?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think, you know, ultimately working with sort of regulators and sort of, you know, circle discussions within the market is important because we need to ensure that our product still works. And, you know, ultimately we don't rely on any, like, you know, cookie data. So we're in a safe position there. It's then just a case of us ensuring that the product continues to work in all the DSPs as they kind of take their own kind of specific direction. But I think for lots of clients, that's a bit of a tick box at the moment. You know, it's still far enough away that it's like, right, can you still work in a cookieless era? Okay, great. I will continue to engage. So I think, you know, when it comes to client discussions, it is all around, look, a CPA is not my source of truth. I have something else, or, you know, I'm using multi-touch attribution, you know, likes of like Visual IQ, for example, and I want my programmatic advertising to be able to optimize that. That's something we're here to help with. And I think, you know, it's getting them, ensuring that their marketing dollars are working towards that true kind of final KPI that they're looking for, rather than sort of using a proxy that they might have used previously in the DSPs, which, you know, has been good for years. But actually, if they can go beyond that, they want to give it a try. And, you know, everyone wants to innovate, right? No one wants to be left behind. And yeah, we're certainly seeing that movement.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to hearing a lot more about Cybids in the market over the coming year or so. We've pretty much run out of time. Thank you very much, Harriet, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really loved it. And I hope the hangovers get better this afternoon.
Well, I think it's certainly fair to say that we definitely had at least one hangover fueled rant from Ciarán there in the podcast.
I don't think it's hangover fueled at all. I think, I think we had a good discussion there. Cybids definitely fits into the progressive technology that will help the industry. That's why I think it's a very important segment.
100%.
Who cares about cookies and IDs? Nobody. Nobody.
Certainly not Ciarán. And in any case, it wasn't a criticism, Ciarán. You know, hangover fuel discussions are always, always exciting, always a delight with you.
And if anybody listens from Google, I don't hate you. I just don't. I think you're great people. I just want you to leave ad tech alone. Go away.
I so desperately want someone who works for Google to be listening to this and send us a little message afterwards. It'd be great. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ciarán. Thanks, Harriet. Thanks, everybody, for listening. That was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.